I got to see the master of this craft work with arguably one of the greatest baseball players of all time and see very quickly that 83 to 85% of the content of the conversation had nothing to do with the field of play. It had everything to do with managing the stuff off the field.
You're listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. This is your seat at the table. So let's join Roland as he talks with successful entrepreneurs who reveal their step-by-step mindset and business strategies, all while sharing amazing stories, great wine, travel hacks, and other delicious tidbits. Welcome to episode 3 of the Business Lunch podcast. I'm Darren Clark, the producer of the show, and this could be a life-changing episode for you. It was for me. In the show, what is the secret of people that perform consistently at a very high level? And what tools can you use to unlock the very best version of you?
So this is Roland Frazier. We are here at Business Lunch. Welcome. And I am very excited to have Todd Herman here today because Todd and I have talked about a whole bunch of cool things. And you have a book that's coming out. I don't know if it will be. I think it'll be coming out shortly after this podcast or right about this time.
It will be in
Fantastic.
A couple of weeks.
And what is the title of the book?
The title is The Alter Ego Effect, The Power of Secret Identities to Transform Your Life.
Sounds pretty compelling. I like that.
I hope so.
So welcome. Thank you for joining.
Absolutely. Thanks, man.
I always like to hear the origin story.
Sure.
What's the story that got you to where you are right now?
So I was an athlete in my small little town of Medicine Hat, Alberta, and I had aspirations of playing college football, but unlike the prototypical football player, I was not 6'2" and 285 pounds or 65 pounds of muscle. I was 6 feet, but I was about 165 pounds soaking wet.
Why were you wet? That's what I want to know.
That's a story for another day. I loved the football. I just love football. And I knew that on the field of play out there, I needed to play bigger than what I was. And I had these heroes of Walter Payton and Ronnie Lott. Mm-hmm. Ronnie Lott was just this absolute vicious hitter on the defensive side of the ball for San Francisco. And I was also a Native American buff. So what I crafted was I started going on the field and playing as them. Mm-hmm. And I actually took trading cards of Walter Payton and Ronnie Lott and I'd stuff them in my helmet and in my shoulder
pads.
Yeah, and in
cool.
And in my thigh pads. And then I created this master kind of self that I'd go out there with. And my name was Dronimo. Again, I was kind of combining everybody. And that's who I played as out there. And then when I got done playing football and I went and played college ball, then I started in business and I had won this award at a young age. And I wanted to get out there and start talking to people more about my experience with mental toughness stuff and how it really helped me with sport. And my problem was I looked like I was 12 years old. And I had this massive insecurity around, you know, who's going to believe me on stage? Yeah, exactly. Which, fair enough.
You had all kinds of degrees in psychology and stuff like that, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, not at all. I was ceremoniously kicked out of school my first year at the University of Alberta. Even though I was playing football there, I busted my leg up and I couldn't play football. And I started a business. And I was like, well, I'm learning a lot more by running a business than I am in my classroom learning about business.
Right.
So I left. But that didn't mean that I wasn't constantly consuming information around just the mind and mental game and, you know, finding that perfect performance state to get into. And then I was really good at maybe teaching it to other people. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I started out by just talking to young kids. But getting back to this, I was insecure and it was really stopping me from getting out there and kind of marketing myself because I had this just huge insecurity on who's going to believe me.
And so many people do.
It was just dominating my behavior and my actions. And then I remember back to, I grew up in a really small rural school, 65 kids, kindergarten to grade 9. My best friend when I was growing up was Mark Volk. Mark, if you're out there, hey. And Mark had glasses. And when I say smartest guy, he won the National Math Award in our small town. And in my sister's grade, you're the smartest kid in that class, James, he had glasses. So, you know, we all kind of developed these irrational beliefs. And so my belief was that people who wore glasses were smarter and, you know, were more respected. So I thought to myself, well, I've got perfect vision, but I'm going to go to the Lens Crafter at West Edmonton Mall and I'm going to buy a pair of non-prescription glasses and I'm going to step out onto this new business field as a new alter ego.
Okay.
And my first name is actually Richard. My middle name is Todd if I was going by Todd. But in my head, I was going to step into this Richard guy who is more competent and articulate and decisive. And when I put on my glasses, that's who I would be. So I started using it for myself.
Okay.
And then when I started working more with athletes, I found that the athletes that seem to be performing at a far more consistent level would talk about these personas and characters and alter egos or secret identities that they would use.
So now you work with a lot of, and have worked with a ton of professional athletes, right?
A ton.
So give me a little bit of that evolution. So yeah. You're working with athletes now. Did you start with kids?
Started with young kids, yeah.
And then how does it transition into
the pros?
Yeah.
So I'm not a marketing guy. That's why I come to hang out with you guys, because you guys are far smarter at it than I am. But I was good at one thing. I was a 4-H kid who had to do public speaking as a 10-year-old, 11-year-old. Mm-hmm. So I thought to myself, well, I'm going to go out there and do as many talks as I can on what I call the triune athlete, the mentally, emotionally, and physically tough athlete, to develop supreme leaders, not only on the field, but off the field as well.
Now, are you wearing the glasses that you don't need at that time?
Yeah, okay.
And that just kind of took it all away for you?
Yeah, took it all away.
100%. Were you, and you were in an alter ego then?
Yeah.
And when was it just the glasses, or was it that you had some other speaker that you were channeling at that point?
Well, I had Jim Rohn as a mentor at an early age.
It's a good one.
So to some extent, influenced definitely by that, by him, by, you know, an element of Zig Ziglar and those other kind of great speakers. But then also I really wanted to have a lens of like real scientific basis in the stuff that I talked about. And I loved teaching people kind of the science of it. So there was Stephen Hawking was my hero.
Okay.
I'm dyslexic. And so the first book that I actually could read was The Brief History of Time, which sounds crazy, but it kept my brain just on fire as I was reading it. And so he was a big part of my alter ego.
Okay, so you have the glasses on, you're speaking at all these things now, you had kids, and now you're talking about these things and it's attracting athletes, or did you seek them out?
So I thought to myself, well, I'm getting asked by people to mentor their young sons and daughters, but is this actually a business? So I decided, okay, well, I'm going to spend the next 90 days validating this thing. I'm going to see if this mental game coaching stuff is actually a real thing. Because again, this wasn't a business for me at that time. It was just, I like talking about it. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to do as many talks as I can around my province of Alberta in the next 90 days. So I called up two people that I knew could put me in front of their groups.
Right.
One was a hockey association. One was a hockey team.
Okay.
And I went out,
did my talk. Did you play hockey as well?
No, I didn't. I was a football guy. So, I'm Canadian, so everyone plays hockey. It's just, you come up with skates on. That's just the way that it works
that
up there.
That makes sense. Okay. And sounds painful, but
It does. Yeah. So I did those two talks. And at the end of every talk, I would say, listen, for the next 90 days or 66 days, whatever the timeline was at that point when I was doing the talk, I'd say, this talk is, I'm doing them for free. And I'm passionate about getting this message out to people, you know, and then I'm going to start charging, going back up to the normal rate of $2,000 at the time.
And what was the talk?
It was about developing your mental and emotional state, because I wasn't going to touch the physical side. That was for their coaches to do, their skill-based people, you know, but I was really good at the mental and getting people into that real performance state.
Okay, cool.
And it ballooned. So I did 68 speeches in 90 days throughout the province of Alberta by simply asking at the end. I know a lot of you parents sit at the back of the room and you got a young son or daughter that isn't here tonight and I'd love to come out and do this talk for them. So please come up to me at the end and let's exchange information and let's get me in there to talk to them as well. And 33% of the room would come up and say, you know, yeah, let's get you out to talk to my daughter's swim team or whatever. And that's how it mushroomed into.
What a great way for all of the people who feel like they have a message that they want to share to get an audience, because so many people ask us, it's like, well, how do you get on stages and stuff like that? And your story is perfect because the answer is you
do
create that, right? Do the work. And so brilliant to me to ask at the end, right?
Yeah. It's the value of putting a price tag on it too, right? It's like, you know, it's one thing to say, hey, here's my, you know, PDF to download, or here's my PDF valued at $29 to download, right? It's
just the
psychology of it, right? And again, this was not by, you know, brilliance. It was more just accidental ignorance that, you know, was-
Turns into brilliance.
Turned out well. Yeah, and so I did those talks. And again, on this, one of my first talks was I brought my crappy little Staples flip chart into a sweaty hockey locker room after a group of 12-year-olds had just finished a hockey game. Uh-huh. Of the 17 players, 13 of them walked out with their parents and 4 stuck around with their parents. And I did my talk. But in that moment, I was like, this is such an awesome example because I know where I'm going.
Right.
Like, I love talking about this is going to be a good story 10 years from now in a book I'm going to write maybe.
Right.
Reality was it was 20 years later.
So you had 4 people.
Yeah.
You literally stood there and watched 13 people walk out the door.
Yeah.
And you hung in. You didn't go,
no.
Oh my God, this is ridiculous.
That's what a pro does, man.
I agree with you so much. And it's funny because at events that we do, we have that where people, you know, people experience that. We were talking about that a little bit ago. I love that because I think the same thing. It's like, it's not the people who your message is not for. You're not going to reach them anyway. So if they're not paying attention or they're walking out like that, those 4 kids that stayed, I guarantee you impacted them.
So it was snowball effect after that. It was one of my first clients, Brandon. His cousin had just started playing in the NHL and was a rookie. And Brandon's mom reached out to the young guy in the NHL and said, hey, Brandon's working with this mental game guy. And I know you're kind of struggling with this transition. You know, maybe it'd be helpful to talk to him. And, you know, to his credit, he did. And that was my kind of first pro client. And then
that's a one-on-one talk.
One-on-one. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I've done 15,968 hours of one-on-one coaching since the beginning. That's not group stuff. That's not two people. That's one person where I can really crawl inside the 6 inches between their ears and really find out how they're ticking, what's really blocking them in some way.
Did you find that the 10,000 hour thing is
100%?
Yeah.
You know, it
did anything change or crystallize in your mind kind of magically around that as you got near or through that?
Yeah, somewhere along the line you're just developing this complete unconscious ability to read very quickly what a roadblock is about to become. Mm. The danger though, and this is the expert danger, is that you start to forecast a problem before it's actually a problem.
Interesting.
Right? Because you start to make these assumptions that, okay, this person has the same issue that, you know, Tony had with the, and you can't do that. You got to be very disciplined and stick to your methodical approach to uncovering with people. Mm-hmm. So that predictive nature can also be a detriment to the expert.
Yeah. And when you're diagnosing, it's very easy to say, what you just said, yeah. you fall into a pattern. When I practiced law, it was kind of the same thing. It's like, oh, well, this is the Johnson case, which yeah. is exactly, you know, and you might miss the nuances, particularly in your thing where you're helping yeah. really get into people's minds and things like that. So yeah. how do you guard against that?
You need to be disciplined with your approach that you used all along and stay curious, like okay. stay curious to the individual and not start comparing them to someone else. You can use that stuff as good analogy or metaphor when you're maybe trying to get that person to relate to someone else's problem, mm-hmm. but stay disciplined in the approach to really being curious about that individual. And again, that's what really separates the great coaches, advisors, mentors anyway, yeah. is the experience that the person has is that, oh, he's really listening to me.
Right.
Right. Really listening to me and getting me or something like that. That bond yeah. is now you've got
them. You got buy-in.
Now yeah. you've got buy-in. And that's the most important part of this entire process is finding and getting trust. Because once you've got that trust, now that person opens up and really releases the dogs and releases the hounds of like all the things that are maybe, you know, troubling and stopping them in some way.
Okay. So you're talking with this one gentleman and you're coaching him, yeah. Your first consulting client of, yeah. of 15,968 hours, yeah, which is right. awesome. What happens?
So he starts to get some real great wins early on. And I want to backtrack just a second. And sure. I am a product of mentorship. I believe in mentorship. I think apprenticeship is a massive lost art. People in the blue collar world, they understand it. Welders,
yes.
you know, cabinet makers, they understand apprenticeship's value. But I think in the white collar or the thinking space, people have lost that. And when you think about the Renaissance, the greatest era in, you know, art history, yeah. it was a byproduct of mentorship and apprenticeship. So I was reading a bunch of books, and there's only one guy who made a lot of sense. Because again, I played sports at a pretty good level, and a lot of sports psychologists, they just didn't make sense. I'm like, that's going to make you think more out there. And that's the exact opposite of what I'm trying to get my athletes to do.
Right.
But there's a guy, Harvey Dorfman, who wrote Coaching the Mental Game.
Okay.
He's known as the Yoda of baseball. Amazing
man.
Should
we read that?
Swore like a trucker. Absolutely. Okay. Everyone can read it.
Okay.
And I reached out to him. And I said to Harvey, I said, Harvey, we've never had the opportunity to meet yet, but I'm just getting started in this mental game world. And I've read a lot of different books and you're the only one who makes pragmatic sense. You speak just the truth of the matter. And I would love to, because I'm sure you've got another book in you that you want to write. And I'd love to come down to North Carolina, which is where he was living at the time, okay. and just help you out, whether organize your office, take stuff off your plate.
Reached out cold.
Yeah, reached out cold.
And then made an offer to help in any way.
Made an offer to reach out and help in any way.
That's ballsy. I like it.
You know, so I kind of made that offer and his response back was, you don't expect to live with me, do you? And I said, no.
That's not a no though.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I said, yeah, exactly. I said, no, I've got an aunt and uncle who live near you and I can stay with them. And, you know, I've already asked them. And
did you have an aunt and uncle that lived near?
So the answer is no.
All right.
I didn't. So the long story short, Harvey said, yeah. And I went down there. It was January.
Did this just shock you that this guy that wrote this amazing book that you had no clue who he was before you found it, that you reached out to, A, that you were able to get a hold of him, and B, he's like, as long as you don't live with me, uh-huh. it's okay to come down.
Not really. I think I was just too ignorant to not. I mean, now maybe, but no. I probably came at it the right way. I sounded like I was
asked because you had the you said you had the credibility concern or fear.
Yeah.
And you kind of assumed the alter ego, which we'll talk about in a minute. But here, did that fear not enter into your mind? And I ask because for the people that are listening that are thinking, I should do that, right?
Sure.
But they're afraid.
Yeah.
Like you were to speak initially.
Yeah.
And they're not ignorant because they already know this fear exists.
Yeah.
What do you tell those people?
We're going to get into a concept in a second called enclosed cognition.
Okay.
Which I'm going to explain, because when I made that phone call, I didn't make it as Todd, the insecure guy. And I'd kind of moved a little bit past that because I had some speaking under my, and I'd gotten some good results for people.
Okay.
But I still did it as, you know, in my head, Richard. I had my glasses on and I was being very decisive.
And now Richard is your alter ego of yourself. Basically, it's almost like another version of yourself, as opposed to assuming the players that you were talking about before.
That's right.
So there's a couple of ways to do
this.
There's
a ton of ways to do this. Awesome. Yeah, there's many, many avenues to the center of this idea of an alter ego effect.
Sweet.
So long story short, I went down. And the reality was, again, I didn't have an aunt and uncle who lived nearby, but there was a Motel 6 that I stayed in for $28.50 a night.
That's awesome.
I had no money. Again, like I was charging $75 for a packet of three sessions for quite a few years, actually. I mean,
And have you since raised your prices slightly?
Just slightly. $79. So I didn't have very much money, but I went down there and on the eighth day of being around Harvey, Roger Clemens flew in for his annual pilgrimage to come and see Harvey.
Interesting. Now, so Harvey's already consulting with top folks.
Oh no, he's the Yoda.
He
worked with every major league baseball team. He was in his late 60s and he's the giant of the industry, 100%. And so Roger Clemens came in. The very next day, Andy Pettit came in. The very next day, Craig Biggio came in. Like the absolute, the all-star team of the era was coming in to see Harvey.
And how is Harvey introducing you to these folks?
So right the day before Roger was coming, he's like, hey, I've got a client coming in tomorrow. Would you like to sit in on it? And I mean, in my head, I'm like, that's exactly what I wanted.
Right.
This is working out. I'm so smart. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. So he would come in and introduce me to the athlete and just say, hey, this is just one of my apprentice. And he's just going to sit down and take some notes. And again, confidentiality, 100%. And
right.
Roger basically ignored me anyway.
Right, but it's great, right? You get to be almost as literally a fly on the wall as you can without being a fly.
But I got to see the master of this craft for 6 hours work with the arguably one of the greatest baseball players of all time, greatest pitchers anyway of all time, and see very quickly that 83 to 85% of the content of the conversation had nothing to do with the field of play.
Right.
It had everything to do with managing the stuff off the field.
Right.
And
already kind of knew, right?
No, I couldn't have learned that at the pro level.
Okay.
At the pro level, because I only had a couple of clients. Mm-hmm. I couldn't have seen it would take me a long time. And again, that's the value of apprenticing.
So this is something that's kind of interesting. So you had in your mind, pros are different.
Yes.
Right. But the problems and the content is it turned out to be roughly the same?
Roughly the same.
Okay, all mental.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's managing friends and family. Like we all, it's like, you know, ambitious people, you've got this ambition to be great at this professional craft that you've got, but then you also have these other values, whether they're family values or whatever. And sometimes you might feel like you're sacrificing something. And, you know, that was the content of that conversation.
Do you have to?
No, you don't.
Because you see people like Steve Jobs or Elon Musk who have certainly had challenges in their personal family life. And then you say, but they're changing the world.
Sure.
Can you change the world and have great family relationships?
Absolutely. You 100% have to know and define what is then truly important. You can't have the same type of weekend barbecue life that maybe other people get to have in your suburban world. And even myself, I have a Venn diagram of three specific groups that are in that Venn diagram. And that's what I maintain my focus on is those three things.
Groups?
Those three groups are my family. They get my time. And this is my time Venn diagram. Okay. Who gets my time? My family does. My friends do. My close friends do.
Uh-huh.
And paying clients get my time.
Nice.
If you sit outside of that circle, whenever I have a window, that's when you get to have some of my time.
Got it.
You know, that's why it's important for people who do have maybe expertise to find another platform to share that stuff, podcast, just like you're doing right now, right?
Yep.
Gives you an opportunity to leverage that and get it out to people because it can't get your time.
Right.
It's hard to do that. And so I think people just are undisciplined in being very self-aware of what's truly important to you while you're on this kind of—
I like that you have the visual of it with the Venn diagram.
Yeah,
It's pretty cool. Okay, so you're sitting with Clemens and all these guys and Harvey and you're almost a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
What—
And so I get to see very quickly what the master does with them and what the challenges are of that athlete. And I took that away. And so I was there for 30, 32, 33 days with Harvey and went off. And he ended up referring me a lot of clients because he was the big name. A lot of young people would start reaching out to him and he didn't have...
And these are the up and comers.
Yeah, the up and comers. And he'd say, listen, I don't have an available spot to work with you, but there's someone else that I work with. And he would say, he's even better than me at this. And
really?
He would say that because, I mean, he needs to allay their fears that they're going to get a second-rate chopped liver.
But he's
person,
also,
right?
I mean, this is his reputation on the line. That's pretty strong recommendation.
And to Harvey's credit, that is his legacy. He did that for many, many, many mental game people and sports psychology people that were out there. He went out and hunted out really great people, and he did that.
He's a really good example of something that I like to talk with people about. He's the bridge. Uh-huh. Right. So if you were to just dial up all these guys and say, hey, I got this really cool stuff, right? It would be very difficult to get through the walls of gatekeepers that they've created around their lives so that they can stay focused on their circles, right?
Yeah.
But you have a bridge, the inn that you were able to create.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, it was kind of accidental, but maybe it was a bit intentional without realizing it.
Yeah.
Would you say that that's a good way for people to try to get into groups that they might otherwise have a real challenge getting into that are they're big barriers to entry, like pro sports or something like that?
Is to specifically go and work with someone or?
Right. Someone that already had to find a way in.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we all talk about it in our groups that, you know, we're fortunate now that we're one phone call or a text message away from a friend or an associate who can help us solve a big problem.
Right.
You know, and so if everyone's focus was around how can I constantly develop a stronger Rolodex of people, relationships, business moves at the speed of relationships, you know, your family moves at the speed of great relationships as well. Like the better advice that you can get around how to have a great family. So absolutely reaching out to people, but then not doing it in some subversive way, but you're truly trying to add value to that person.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? And again, really the mentor gets a ton of value from this as well.
Yep.
Because they get to share and see someone who goes and executes. And that's the power of this. If you're the person who goes and executes,
right,
there is no greater feedback loop to the teacher, the mentor, the advisor than that, because they get to see their idea that they use maybe be successful,
right,
go and applied by someone else, and they get a different form of that success.
Yeah.
But it creates such a great feedback loop for that person.
And teaching someone else too requires you to dial your stuff in so much better than if you're just practicing without, with like kind of this unconscious competence. Okay, so now you're introduced to all these folks. Now you've got all these young up-and-comers as well as you're accumulating more and more hours. What's the framework that kind of evolved from that?
So, and again, I didn't invent alter egos. Alter egos were first named by Cicero back in 86 BC. I just happened to, when I started working with more elite professionals, and the elite professional, in my view, can be an 11-year-old too, who just approaches it with an elite mindset.
Sure.
There are many pros that are playing in the amateurs, and there are many amateurs that are playing in the pros. We see it all the time.
And the difference is?
And the difference is the professional mindset that they have towards their craft, the disciplined approach. There are many athletes who play in the pros right now that are amateurs because they're not treating themselves and the opportunity like a pro would.
Right.
So I found that this kind of pattern started evolving where the athletes that were consistently performing at a high level would use words like, well, you know what? I've got this persona that I go on the field as, and it's always like in a hushed tone. It's like, well, I have this like secret identity that I use or alter ego. And for me, initially it was like, oh my God, I used one too. I used Walter Payton and I used Ronnie Lott and I put the trading cards in and I, you know, Geronimo and
which had to immediately create a connection between
connection.
You and, that,
and
right?
then we would start talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so initially it was really just a conversation piece, but then after a while, it was this one lady that I was working with from the Ukraine and a tennis player, and she mentioned it. And then in my head, I was like, wait a second, boom. Like the consistency of dominoes sort of finally fell in my head.
Right.
And I went back to my notes, all my clients, and that persona thing was consistent amongst those ones who were competing at really, really high levels. So
that had to be a real like chill moment.
It was awesome.
Like, this is.
Yeah. Just, I'm like, I think I just found something. It's like kind of cracking a code on something.
Yeah.
And I went back, and even clients that I wasn't currently working with, I would go back and I'd say, hey, can I talk to you about your persona? And I just unpack, hey, how do you get into it? What's your step? Like, what's your hold? And I'd ask people. And so I started kind of codifying it. And initially it was like 7 steps and 6 steps and 4 steps. It just sort of moved around and, you know, combined into, you know, this cohesive system that it is now. But that became what I became known for in pro and Olympic space is, hey, Todd, you need to go talk to Todd. He'll help you build an alter ego, because it was the fastest path to get people to high performance really quickly. Okay. That whole suspension of disbelief that you can go and do something, I'm like, no, you hold on to that. If you want to own that and maybe you need therapy to help you with that, go right ahead. But we can use this other concept where it suspends this idea that you have about what your identity is, and let's create and craft a new identity for that field of play out there. And let's be very—
You're effectively suspending all of the limiting beliefs that are holding you back from being that, that persona, right?
Sure. And we talk about how even just cognitively in the brain, we can't hold two competing thoughts at the same time, two competing ideas. One will always win out, and you'll be acting through that idea.
Interesting.
You know, it's like the famous Native American quote of, you know, there's two wolves inside of you, an evil wolf and a good wolf, and they both represent the different values. And the young native says, well, who's going to win? And the elder says, the one you feed the most, right?
Right.
And so this alter ego concept is about feeding the good wolf.
Does it happen that the more you assume the alter ego that you are feeding, that eliminates the fear and you have less need for it? Or does it take over? Or how does feeding that as you're assuming it manifest itself?
So when we're creating that alter ego for people, we're really defining that entire identity. How does that alter—
So you're creating this for them. You're helping them.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So it's like, what does that alter ego even think? Like, what are its thoughts? Like, and how does it feel about that field? And what does it have the same fears that you're struggling with right now? I don't think so, because I don't think Walter Payton and Ronnie Lott would have some sort of fear that guy is going to run over them, because I didn't.
Is it based on people usually? Like
no. So probably the easiest place that people go to automatically is superheroes and, you know, characters, right, kind of thing. But many people use animals, you know, so like Kobe Bryant, his alter ego was the Black Mamba.
Okay.
And where he got that inspiration from was when he was watching Kill Bill, and there was the scene with the snakes.
Yeah, yeah.
And he saw the Black Mamba. And again, now he's attaching meaning to what, so it's very personal.
Sure.
Like, we all get to watch movies and we all get to experience it differently. And so he viewed that snake as just quick to strike.
Interesting.
You know, this elegant, you know, smooth moving. And that's what he enclothed himself with when he would go on to the court, is this idea of the Black Mamba. So it can be just inspired by a few things. And, you know, the great thing about this concept is you can use just a sliver of what I talk about in the book and you're going to get a result.
Right.
You can use the entire full meal deal of it and you can get maybe an even better result. But there's no, like, you've got to do it and you can only be successful if you do these seven steps.
Right.
That's not the way the book is written.
Okay.
I tell tons
Choose
of stories.
Choose your adventure kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for saying that, because that's what I even say in the book.
Yeah.
Chapter 4. After I've kind of gotten through the initial concept of stuff, I'm like, now choose your own adventure. If you want to go to this chapter and learn about totems and artifacts and how to, you know, choose something that's going to help you trigger that alter ego, go and read that. And then it might trigger you to go back and read about how to develop your superheroes and super characteristics to become better.
So, in our world, in our marketing world, we have a concept we call results in advance.
Yeah.
And we get people to consume our content by giving them some ability to get a result before they buy it or commit to it or whatever. In your world with the book, would there be something that people could do right now that you could share that would help them see how this can actually help them, that would then encourage them to consume the amazing content that's in the book?
There's a scientific principle, and the Northwestern University did this great little study on this idea of enclothed cognition. And what it means is there are clothing that you will see or you'll wear, and that clothing or that item has cognitive meaning to you. And if you put it on, it's going to change your characteristics, your behaviors, your actions. So the way that they did this study was they brought a group of young students into a room, and there's that great kind of maybe viral puzzle that's out there where it's the words of different colors. So yellow, orange, black, blue, brown, but the color of the word is different than the word itself. So yellow might be colored in orange and blue might be in brown. And your job is to go through that puzzle and say the words as quickly as you can. But it really mixes up your brain, right?
Because
you're like, but it's...
And all
it's,
the color, all the words are in different colors.
All the words are in different
what
colors.
Things are. Okay.
So what they did was they put them in front of this puzzle, and I think it's about a 5x5 grid, and they timed them, and they tracked their focus and concentration skills and how quickly they could get through this puzzle. So they did that study, or did that little test with those group. And again, they're in their plain clothes, go into the next room, they bring in another group. And they handed them a white coat.
Okay.
And they said that this is a painter's coat.
Okay.
And then they got them to do that same thing and time them, focus, concentration, speed, and then they leave. And then they brought in another group, hand them the exact same white coat and told them that this is a lab coat or a doctor's coat. And then they did it.
Okay.
Captured the information. Now, what do you think the difference was between the painter's coat people and the plainclothes people?
It's interesting, and I know because you told me, but now that I'm thinking about it, and especially with the artist hat on, I would actually think if you were assuming the painter thing,
yeah,
you ought to be maybe a little bit better at it than if you were just in your regular clothes.
No change in data whatsoever. There is.
You think it's because they had a harder time? Like we know what doctors are. Mm-hmm. Like doctor, we all have this image of what a doctor is, but maybe we can't relate to a painter so much.
Yes and no.
Okay.
So there's some nuance to that. So there's no difference in the information, but when they took a look at the people who wore the lab coat, the doctor's coat, they did it in half the time. They made less mistakes, so their focus and concentration
was
better. So
they're more methodical, but they did it faster.
Methodical and faster.
Interesting.
And that's because when you put on a doctor's or lab coat means something to us.
Right.
It means that we're more scientific or more methodical or more decisive and focused or whatever. And so it changes. So that coat, when you put it on, enclothes you in meaning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they did another test where they brought a group in and they put the white lab coat on a mannequin next to the person. Didn't change anything. Because the person didn't put it on. And then they did another test where they brought people in and gave them a creative test. And when they told them that this was a lab coat, a doctor's coat, didn't change their creativity skills, didn't allow them to actually paint anything different. But when people were told that when there was a painter's coat, more expressive, better at—
Really? So they were assuming that a little.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, so it did enclose them in a different cognitive state.
Huh.
So the point, what's the takeaway that we can give people with that they can, you know, results in advance?
Yep.
Is anytime you're like, when you're thinking about whatever your most important field of play is for you, like it could be it's for most people, it's going to be maybe their business, or it could be their family as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the place that's frustrating you right now with your results or your performance? You know, and then when you think about, okay, if you're really intentional about who and what you'd want to show up as in that place, what is that? What are the qualities that you have? What are those superpowers, those super characteristics that you have? For me, it was, you know, starting out, I wanted to be more articulate. I wanted to be more decisive. And I wanted to be more confident that was out there. Because I knew I had those three qualities, it was going to help my clients a lot better.
Right.
And I was going to get past myself. So to the listener, you know, what are those qualities that you might not feel like you're exhibiting right now, but you want to be exhibiting?
Okay.
So who or what might be exhibiting those things right now? Is it a panther? I've got people who use panthers. Is it, I've got a client who their alter ego is a stag deer because they grew up in Germany and it has this like regalness. And honestly, when you know more about animals, stags fight off bears with their horns.
Yes, they
like,
do.
That's amazing,
yes.
Right? Or it could be a person. I've got a client who uses Ziva David from NCIS. That's her alter ego because she's a young Jewish racquetball player in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And Ziva David is a former Mossad, you know, assassin.
Right.
And this confident, you know, just woman. And so that's her alter ego because there's a connection that's there. It could be a movie character, a fictional character. It could be a superhero. It could be, I've got a client who uses their grandma, who survived the Holocaust. Her husband died in the Holocaust, brought four children over with her from Europe, raised them all up to be doctors and like leading people in the New York area. And when he thinks about what he needs to do in the difficult decisions of the finance world that he's in New York City, he has a photo of his grandma on his desk. And when he needs to switch it on and become more confident and just that grit that he feels like he needs, he just turns that frame slightly, and that's the switch. Even the sound of it on the desk creates this.
Even the metaphor of changing the frame, that's kind of interesting.
Exactly.
Okay,
and so that's his switch.
Now, these aren't really enclosed cognition things, right? So let's go back to to the thing people can do.
So
how do they do that?
Yeah, so is there anything that you own right now that owns a meaning that if you wore it, would enclose itself or would give you a cognitive lift to help you adopt those superhero characteristics? Some people, it might be a bracelet. And when you think about it, it's like the same bracelet that Wonder Woman puts on to kind of deflect away any of those negative things that come your way. Is it a ring? Is it a, you know, you can enclose anything in meaning. Okay. You can enclose. If you're,
is there something they should be thinking when they put that on, like that helps them as well? Or is it just the fact that they have it on?
No, it's the switch. Like, okay. Be very intentional about, you know, what that thing means and who you're about to become with it. And the moment that you start to slip back into whatever those negative states might be, or whatever that negative thinking might be, or whatever those frames are that are holding you back, you need to take it off.
Okay.
Because you cannot dishonor that alter ego by thinking those things, feeling those things. It's like, if I'm going to truly step into being Walter Payton, I can't dishonor his memory by not acting the same way. If I'm going to step into being like Martin Luther King, then I can't dishonor his memory by, you know, not thinking mission-driven wise.
So if we're going to state this as a challenge for folks that are listening to take some action based on this, what should we tell them to do? To like today or tomorrow, you need to do this, but preferably right now because you're listening to it, right?
Yeah. It's this. It's that anyone can change their results in a moment with just conviction. And it's almost a cliche, but there's just way too much science. You know, I've got 21 years of experience doing this with people.
Right.
And you can see a switch with people. You can see their physical bodies just change. And it's just like, you know, if you've been living with something that has just troubled you for a long time, just know that in a moment, I'm not saying we're going to get rid of it forever and it might not show up, but on an important field of play for you, you can play a different character. And it's not about you being fake because really what you're doing is you're activating core parts of who you already are.
It's the opposite you're of just fake. Using, you're being true to the, to the identity that you're assuming.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And you're simply activating it through the tool of another identity, another secret identity, someone else who's already done it, maybe. That's the creative imagination that we're gifted with. If you think about what really differentiates human beings, it's not love. It's not our ability to love, because it's been proven through the animal world that love exists in other animals with the way that they are organized into groups. And so that's not our uniqueness. Our uniqueness is truly our creative imagination ability.
Right.
Our ability to create new worlds.
So our challenge, Todd's and my challenge to everyone who's listening, is to try this, finding this thing, this article of clothing, this ring, this thing that you can put on yourself, that you can wrap yourself and clothe yourself in, that will cause you to
shift,
think a little bit differently and shift. And when you do, you will experience some change. And if you want to go deeper, what will they learn in the book in a few sentences or thoughts?
So
beyond that,
not only will you learn about the stories of many people throughout history that have used alter egos. Mm-hmm. If you look at the cover of the book, there is a pair of glasses that are on there. Now, I wear glasses and I have perfect eyesight. I use them really just for business dress now. I don't need them anymore to be like, you know, to step into an alter ego. Uh-huh. I use the reference of Clark Kent and Superman in there, and, you know, just that kind of idea of, you know, that's an example of that thing happening, but they're not Clark Kent's. They're actually someone else's glasses that will shock people as to A, who it is, and that person used an alter ego to step into a higher version of themselves so that they could carry forward a very important message. One of the most influential people of the 20th century, this person is, but I tell a lot of other stories.
Okay.
Also, I give people the exact process to use. There's no upsell that they need to have.
Right.
There's other resources that they can go
and
get.
It's all in the book.
It's all there in the book.
Fantastic.
You know, I've been sitting on this for 15 years and I'm excited to get it out in front of people.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool. So I'm going to shift away from business stuff for a minute.
Yep.
I am told by a little bird that you are a passionate Halloween dresser upper.
It is. It's not a vice. It's my favorite day of the
year.
I
love
that. Easily.
Now, is that an alter ego or just fun, or what? Where, tell me where it comes from and
you know
what your favorite
from?
Thing to dress up is.
So I am not an introvert. I'm very much an extrovert. I love hanging around with people, and I've always had a fairly outgoing personality. And Halloween was it seemed like it was the only night of the year that everyone else got invited into my party. And, you know, because people would, again, in clothed cognition,
the
perfect example of it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they would dress up in costumes and all of a sudden these other parts of their personalities would start to come out, right? And everyone's experienced that. So I loved it because I got to hang out with a bunch of other people that, you know, exhibited maybe some qualities that were like me, and it opened people's personalities up. So I love that. And yeah, so I always dress up.
Favorite characters?
Favorite characters? Well, oddly enough, I'll openly share this. this is going to not give me a much, very, very much credibility, But
you already have that, and you can always put the glasses on.
I would dress for the longest time. My favorite thing to dress up as was a female character. I did that for like 15 years until my wife came along and said, all right, you need to retire that stuff. So our very first time that we went out as Halloween, I went out as the Joker, Heath Ledger's Joker, but in the nurse's costume.
Oh, awesome.
So I could still get away with it a little bit.
That's so
but,
cool.
But probably my favorite one is actually maybe the one that I just did this year. I went and I probably have had, I've never had more photos taken of me, and there would be no other reason why anyway. In New York City where I live, I was an inflatable unicorn, but I was I also dressed up as a pig writing an inflatable unicorn.
Well, because, you know, I mean, everybody's being the inflatable unicorn,
everyone wants, yeah.
Right. Nice.
Exactly.
So that's awesome. Now, are your kids into this as well?
Love it. Yeah. Especially
how old are your kids now?
Molly is five and a half. Sophie's 4 and a bit. And my little guy, Charlie, is 21 months. So three of them, raising all three of them in the thimble of New York City.
Right. Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And then also I hear that, and I'm sure it's just an oversight because of email spam traps or something that I haven't received my invitation, but apparently you put together these super cool man cave getaway think tanky kinds of things from time to time. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I get, groups of people together that, you know, just all very purpose-driven people, and we get together just to solve each other's problems, and we go off to, we try to rent some nice, beautiful place somewhere and hang out with our families. And
so the families come along?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's kind of one of the, you know, we all get these opportunities to go off, and, you know, even here, I'm in Austin with you right now, and, you know, my wife is back at home holding down the fort, right? And I want to include my family. And this gets at the whole idea of balance. Mm-hmm. The word to really think about is integration.
Okay.
I grew up on a farm and ranch. We lived where we worked. I didn't ever grow up with the idea that my dad had to balance work and family.
Right.
Because it was what it was.
Right.
And so I'm the same way. I get my daughters to set up my podcasting gear. They open up my laptop in the morning and they get me set up for work. And
you're bringing them into your
world. I'm bringing them into the world. And, you know, when I do my live events, I get all of my kids, they're little, but they go up and they have to go on stage and they've got to either read something or they got to sing something. And I want to integrate them into our world because I don't think that the worlds need to be separated.
Right.
So, but anyways, getting back to think tank stuff, just getting good people together to help solve each other's problems and support each other. And
is there any like biggest takeaway that you would say you have had as a result of doing that?
Well, it's the classic: we all have problems.
Right.
None of us are.
My heroes and my peers I look up to also have these challenges, so I'm not insane and crazy for having them too.
Yeah, not at all. I would say that probably the biggest takeaway has been the people who stick to just the fundamentals of business and don't get too caught up in like the shiny object tactic stuff and just stay consistent with, really, we all need to just keep our eye on always audience building. And, you know, when you have that engine always going, you're going to have a healthy business. Even if you're not converting at a high rate, you're always going to have a healthy business.
And it's sure helped you with the book to get one of the largest advances perhaps ever for a first time author that isn't super well known, right? To do this thing. And I'm so happy to have you here before it's impossible to get you. So it's really cool.
Well, listen, I think it's important to always remember who is there for you on the way up. And never forget those people. So anyways, thank you. I appreciate this.
Okay. So now when people want to find out more about you, when they want to get your book, when they want to, dive deeper, where are all the places that they can find you and find more information?
So, I mean, for the book wise, altereegoeffect.com is where they can go. And because this is getting out a couple weeks early, I've got a whole stack of awesome bonuses for people to dig into the book and parts of the book early. And my website's toddherman.me. It's where, you know, you can kind of find me hanging out. And then, of course, I'm across all the social channels. I'm sure we'll have links for people. But yeah, those are the kind of two most important places for me right now.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and hang
out
for a little bit.
Always good to talk. Thanks, man.
You've been listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. For more information, go to businesslunchpodcast.com. Thank you for listening.
What if 3 days could change the course of your business in 2023? Get Scalable Live is where you'll gain great clarity on the next steps that will help you create the business, life, and wealth you deserve. Connect with business owners and entrepreneurs just like you, hungry for advice
proven strategies, and necessary connections to grow a business.
Literally, million-dollar conversations are happening in the hallways, in the bathrooms, across tables.
Get Scalable Live at Fairmont Austin, November 2nd through 4th. Tickets are on sale now at GetScalableLive.com.